Come here, baby.
All right, everybody, and welcome to episode 329 of the 9 Years podcast. I am Nick Draper. I am joined, as always, by the face of the BBC Sport website, Mr. Stuart Deakins. Thank you very much for downloading the show this week. We will be discussing the Tour draw with Crewe from last Saturday before quickly looking ahead to the big European trip to Warsaw on this coming Saturday with a quick roundup of things around League Two, Aaron Sass Supermatch game as well. But Stuart, I want to start on a couple of different topics before we get to the football, or at least the football on the pitch for AFC Wimbledon over the previous week and the coming week. Well, we have to start, I suppose, with the fact we drew 2-2 with Crewe. We threw away the lead, fifth game in a row that we've taken the lead, not gone on to win the game. Very frustrating for everybody. Social media, for the first time this season, started bringing in the manager's position into the conversation for the first time this season. We didn't think it was going to be too long before that happened. It was actually happening certainly around where I sit in the west stand.
The posh seats.
Yeah, we need to give these stands new names. Like, because you know I don't do sponsors' names. No. And see, like, when I first started to go and watch Wimbledon, I was a Selhurst Park kid, I suppose is the way to look at it. And it was nice. You had the White Horse Lane end. It made sense. It was named after the road it was on, the Arthur Waite stand, the Homesdale Road end. Now all these new stadiums, they just kind of go either east, north, east, south, west, or they go sponsor, 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 sponsor. I just need to think we need like, but the thing is the way the stadium's built, I don't know really how do you do it? Is the south stand the Haydens Road end, possibly the Plough Lane end? Maybe that is the Plough Lane end.
That's Plough Lane. Well, maybe you can call it, you know, West Stand, you can call it the Electricity Station side stand.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or you can call it the Danger of Death side stand. Because obviously
that's
the
danger every stand.
No, I know what you mean. Because we're sort of built in a sort of posh cul-de-sac. It's difficult, isn't it? You're right. The Plough Lane end is
posh cul-de-sac. That's the first time that part of London has ever been referred to as posh.
I always say it on my tours, like, you know, I say like Leighton Orient is like, you know, it's symbolic with its flats in the corners. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. We're similar, but we've just got like a very posh council estate with like 600 very posh, very expensive flats. But it does. If you look at it, it's a posh council estate. But you don't have council estates in Wimbledon.
Oh, no. Believe me, you do. Anyway, got completely sidetracked there. Sorry. My seat in the west stand. And as soon as Crewe got a goal back at 2-1, conversations were already being had. If we don't win this game, you've got to question the manager. If we drop points again today, you've got to start questioning the manager. So it was almost like people were salivating. Pavlovian response to the thought of AFC Wimbledon throwing away another lead. I have to make this point, Stu. I am a parody of myself at this point. I'm well aware of this. I hate things all things new and modern and all that jazz, all that razzmatazz. I know I hate it. I know I'm a parody because I think the world is coming to an end and Western civilization is doomed. I will not let it go until more and more people realize this and actually start speaking up about it. The other thing I'm a parody about, apart from my hatred of Liam Trotter, which I again addressed last week, Neil Ardley, right? If you listen to this podcast and you're waiting for these things, take a drink for Nick going about Neil Ardley. But as I'll go on time and 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 time again, the main reason why I thought sacking Neil Ardley was the incorrect decision, what was it now, 2017 it happened? Main reason I said that is because you start to create a culture where you are starting to say that if things aren't going great on the pitch, we're going to start sacking managers. Now, I have been proven correct on this because that's exactly what's happened with every manager since then. Willie Downs, it happened to Glenn Hodges, it happened to Mark Robinson. This is the problem now, is that whenever you get a bad run for, we had a bad second half of the season last season, We had that interview with Craig Cope, first episode of this season. He explained his reasons why he thought that was. Didn't think that, you know, the manager was, you know, the key or amongst the key reasons as to why that was. But when you start have a bad start and then you have this recurring thing with dropping of points from winning positions, people are immediately going to go manager because we've proven before that's what we do. So here we are. So we can moan about it and say you're crazy. And I certainly don't think, you know, when you're winning at home, people shouldn't be talking about the possibilities of what might happen and what, if that does happen, what the ramifications of that happening are. But that's where we are because we've said in the, over the past six seasons, we're going to sack managers. And you can, and Craig Cope has come out and we, the club have done really well and stuck with Johnny Jackson despite a bad second half of the season last season. But unfortunately, you've already, that die is already cast. That precedent is already set. So immediately you get these calls for the manager to go. Your thoughts in general about anything I've said there? Because I'm going to suggest you're on the same page as me in terms of talking about the manager's future at this point is insane.
I agree with you. But the thing is, you know, and Johnny Jackson's openly admitted that, you know, he was not surprised, but he was, you know, if he had lost his job last year because of the form, he probably wouldn't have been surprised. He's gone on record as that. And Craig Cope said on the official podcast, the one before, I think episode three, that in the summer, in very much towards the end of the season, he was having conversations with Johnny Jackson and going, it will get better. He was convinced that it wasn't all down to the manager. Recruitment hadn't been as good as it would have been previously. And you can argue the recruitment's been really good. But I said this ages ago, if we start playing well, it'll be Craig Cope that gets the praise for recruitment.
Yeah.
If we don't play well, it'll be Johnny Jackson because that's the easy target. And you know what? He's a manager, so he's set up for that. The football culture nowadays is your manager gets dismissed if something goes wrong. And you don't really get that long nowadays. And, you know, we're going to get touch upon some managers that have lost their job already. But I also think we have an element of the fan base that want to be proved right. And once the manager gets questioned of their position, I think they've got to do a hell of a lot to turn around that opinion of some fans. And you're always getting the more vocal ones. You know, if you actually look at the stat base, we are, I think, for expected goals, I think we are joint third in the league. And for goals conceded, we are joint second in the league. Now, I know expected goals, you can argue that it's a really weird stat, but it's used quite a lot now, and it's basically how many chances you create. We are doing all the things right. We actually haven't conceded that many goals. It's just the goals we concede end up, you know, drawing a game and stuff like that. So I think we need to judge it on the whole season and not just a few games. It's disappointing. But I don't know about you, Nick, but from what I'm seeing with my own eyes, I can see that we are more than matching teams at the moment. And if we keep playing the way we are, we'll win more games than we don't.
I agree with you. And you make you sort of hint at another point there, which is expectation. Because you say the way we're playing, we're happy with and we're progressing well. Expected goals, whatever your opinions of expected goals are all good and things like that. And I think we're going to have a decent season, which, you know, is going to be for us, in my head, is 10th to 14th, right? Unfortunately,
yep, I agree.
A lot of this managerial stuff will come from that expectation of more than that. And we always have this. And this isn't sustainable.
Where's that expectation come from, though?
Well, but that's for fans.
But has it come from the start that we had? Because you're right. Because I think Barrow will probably make me prove me wrong, but it's very rare for a team to finish in the bottom six one season and then go up into a potential playoff place the season after. That's a massive change.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think my expectation is that year on year, we should be improving our position. Not by one place or two places. I agree with you, mid-table. And again, to go on with Craig Cope, Craig's sort of talking about Luton. If you look at Luton's progress, it's not saying we're going to get into the Premier League, but year on year, they progressed in terms of their positioning. And that's what we surely should be looking at as a club. But yeah, I think your expectation is spot on. But it's just easy, isn't it? When a team ain't performing or they're doing something wrong, it's the manager's fault. Once those players go over that white line, they're managing the game to a certain extent. But yeah.
Mm. That's a great point, though, because it's sort of, I did want to mention something else about Saturday, but it would seem out of place. So let's just focus on the game for a second. So it was a 2-2 draw. We were 2-0 up at half time against Crewe. Josh Nerfell, James Tilley with the goals. But then second half goals from, do you know what? I've not got the first names, but Tabernier, I think it was James Tabernier, and Jason Nevitt were the two goals for Crewe with the equaliser coming. And we will talk about the absolute chaos at the end of the game as well. But the equaliser came about the 10th minute of 15 minutes of added time. But managing the game, Stu, this is what I wanted to touch on, something I don't think has been spoken about much. On field leadership, on pitch leadership, and in those final closing stages, we just didn't seem to have it. I felt throughout the game, and it might have been because, let's be honest, I think Crewe will be fine this season and probably might just be, I think they're a similar place to where we are, to be fair. I think we touch and go between us two teams about which one finishes higher, sort of in that middle of the table. I thought on Saturday they weren't at it at all. The manager said the same thing. I thought they were really poor. I think they're a better team than they showed on Saturday. But even that, so we were dominating the game for long, long spells in terms of possession, territory, all those things. But we were very quiet. And you could argue that's because we didn't need to be any louder because Crewe weren't really at it or whatever. But I thought we were lacking that sort of experienced leadership. And I think that's proven in the way the equaliser comes about, because no one takes charge of that situation whatsoever at any point.
Yeah, and it's a surprise. But obviously, you know, we've got two centre-halves now that are vocal enough. We have, you know, Alex Bass behind him. We know he's not vocal. He sort of does his leadership with his actions and stuff like that. But yeah, I agree with you on that. I felt in terms of obviously our midfield, you know, Jake Rees, I think we're finding that a massive loss in terms of our captain and leadership on there. It's interesting what you say about Crewe, because I think we made Crewe. It's always those, isn't it? You know, did Crewe play poorly or did we make them look poor? And I think it's probably a bit of both. But I felt that we were on the front foot really early. And we just battered Crewe in terms of we'd done the right things, won second balls. And it's no stretch of imagination to say if we'd gone in 3 or 4 up at half time, that would have been, we'd be fair play for that. You know, I looked at one point at a corner and I remember seeing only one Crewe player literally clapping their hands or trying to, you know, motivate his team. And the rest were either doing their socks up or looking down at the floor, and they looked beaten. You know, I was sitting there going, I think body language is a great thing, especially for managers and stuff. And I looked at them and, you know, every one of our players was rushing to get to the corner and wanted the ball and stuff like that. And Crewe didn't. And they got in at half-time and whatever their manager's done and changed shape, fair play. You know, second half, I thought second half they bossed us. I don't think the equaliser was against the runner player or anything like that, if I'm being honest with you. I thought they were worthy of a draw based on the second half. But we are quite, I agree with you. I don't get it sometimes. I felt we just dropped deeper and deeper and deeper. And in the end, Ali was literally running around on a halfway line trying to get scraps on that side of it. And that's just where maybe our... But I also think when you've got 11 minutes of injuries added time, like, I just feel it's very difficult to hang on. It's a long time. Crewe just chucking long ball after long ball after long ball. You know, if you remember before that, Harry Pell clears a head off the line that beating the keeper. They had a goal disallowed, which I don't understand how it was disallowed. I mean, it was well over a line, I think, offside.
Okay.
But we just couldn't. It's like, in a way, we couldn't even waste time. Like, just launch it out of the stadium. Just do. I feel like we've got to a stage now where wasting time just doesn't work because the referee has it on. Because if you think about it, when we actually, when they scored, we had about another 4 or 5 minutes.
Yeah, we still had a chance at the end, didn't we? Yeah.
Yeah. So as if the referee added the chime on for them celebrating, which I think they do. Yeah. I just want to get home before midnight on some games. Do you know what I mean? Like, I do the added time. And I was one that was about added time, and I think it was right to do. I don't know now. I'm just like thinking this is ridiculous, especially when we concede goals so late.
Yeah. Well, that's the main problem, certainly this week. Do you know what part of you might say about them Crewe coming back at us and things like that and us not managing the game, launching the game out? Problem is our forward players is we've got no one that really holds the ball up. We want to play on the counter. We want to get Ali and Omar in behind as quickly as we can. Josh comes on in a similar sort of scenario. So in terms of just having that big lump up top that can just hold on the ball and knock down the seconds in the corners, whatever, we don't have that type of striker. And if you think Aaron Sasu came on late and sort of played forward as well, and he was trying to chase a third goal just before, remember it was him trying to push forward and before they hoofed it. I think we're just missing out on those bits and pieces, which again, Stuart, all ties in. There are certain elements, I think, that with the squad as it currently is, that we are missing. That is why I think we are much improved from last season, but we're still a little bit way off before we start even thinking about anything higher than mid-table. And it's those little things that make the differences, I think.
But if you want to, and it's not trying to defend Joey Jackson, it's just being realistic. You know, he can't control James Tilley missing that chance one-on-one. And there's other Gilles chances that we missed. You know, we could have been 3 or 4 up at half-time, and you would argue we would struggle to give away a 3-0 lead. Let's not chance it. But so what I'm saying is it's about margins, isn't it? But what if your eyes are looking at that game and you're seeing it, we dominated that first half, creating a lot of chances. A goal difference looks decent. So I find it amazing that fans are already going on this with Johnny Jackson. Because I find it laughable, if I'm being honest with you. And all I can put it down to is those fans that wanted Johnny Jackson out have just basically gone like, he's going to go at some point, so let's just get him out as quick as possible. But I just find it laughable. I really do.
Mm. Just looking back again, you say about the chances we had in the first half. We did, but one big feature I thought of the game as a whole was neither keeper really had a big save to make. Do you know what I mean? We had, so you're thinking about the Tilley chance. He should hit the target. Of course he should. I'm astounded that I saw the ball go wide and then I saw it was a goal kick and I was like, surely the keeper's made a save there. I didn't understand how Tilley had actually missed the target completely. Omar Bugo, right on the stroke of half time, just puts it wide of the far post. And then Alex Bass in our goal doesn't have a set. He doesn't make no save. I think he had one that he had to catch from like a 25-yard shot straight forward. Nothing. So again, perhaps lacking that killer. What's the word I'm looking for? Killer instinct. There we go.
But if you also look at it, James Tilley's got his 8th goal of the season. We're only mid-September, and you could argue he scored with the most more difficult chance that he had of the afternoon.
Yeah.
And it goes back to my point with the expected goals or chances that we're making. We are making a hell of a lot of chances. You know, that's, for me, that's what's more pleasing, because as long as you're creating, it's like anything, as long as you're creating those chances, you're going to score more than you're not.
Yeah.
You know, it's when you're not creating any chances that you're going to go, Johnny Jackson, what the hell are you doing? Yeah. But I think the team's been set up fine. And yeah, look, and to say we can't kill games out, well, you could argue the Sutton game we killed off, and the Colchester game we killed off, and both of those teams are trying to come back at us to get, so we have shown that we can kill games off, but it happens. You know, we're a League Two team. We've got players that will make mistakes. That's why they're playing down at League Two. But let's just get behind Joey Jackson. Do you know what I mean? There's a lot of good work that's been done, and he's part of that. It's not just Craig Cove that's doing all the good work. It's been done as a team. So I think we have to trust the process.
Just the process. I mean, the mitigating factor there about what you said about closing out that game, especially Sutton, is that Sutton this season are proper shit.
I know.
Like 7 defeats in a row. But we'll get onto that a little bit later for reasons that you might already be aware of. Yeah. Last tactical thing, you mentioned the Crewe manager made a change at half-time. He did. He went to more of a sort of 3-4-3 formation. I will say Crewe's second half, again, without really creating chances or really threatening us ridiculously despite scoring twice, what I thought they did do was they defended their box much, much better. So James Tilley, you say there with the second goal, if you actually watch it back, by the time he gets the shot away, I think the defending is woeful. Like,
oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But second half, I think they were much better at sort of stopping that and getting us, forcing us almost to go wide. But then when the ball came in the box, we got lots of corners. They defended with them well, really with ease, really, to be honest with you. I'll give them credit for that. I still think they just, I thought I would see more of them as an attacking threat throughout the game, and it just wasn't there for them.
I agree, I agree. But that might be us. And that's why I'm just...
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Because they were scoring goals for fun elsewhere, weren't they?
And well, they did end up scoring 2 again. It's just mad, isn't it? I mean, the injury time situation. So the substitution, I think, my mind plays tricks on me now. But it was Lakin, wasn't it, that was down. We were going to bring 2 subs on, and then Lakin went down. And then there was a big kerfuffle about the substitutions, where I thought perhaps what we'd decided is we'd said, you know what, we were going to bring these 2 players off, but actually we now want to bring Lakin off because he's got a bit of a knock and or he's got cramp or whatever. And the fourth official was saying, no, you can't do that. You've already locked in your subs. Where in fact, it, from what I've heard, it seems to be the other way around, where the fourth official was saying, you've now got to take Lakin off. And we were like, no, we don't want to take him off. We want to go with the original subs. It's all very confusing, but it seemed to take forever. That whole last injury time period was farcical on many levels. Do you happen to know what actually went on there?
No, the truth, I was setting up for the post-match. So I was down the end where the crew fans were, which I loved.
I bet.
So I didn't see that. But I think what you're describing there, I know that when you do a substitution, you have to hand a piece of paper or card to the fourth official. So I'm just surmising here, thinking that maybe we'd already handed that card to the fourth official and then we wanted to withdraw it to do another sub. I don't know the rules around that. You know, is it, you know, once you hand it to the fourth official, you can't take it back? Well, I find that silly because until the player goes on the pitch,
yeah, exactly.
You just tear the card up. But I think the kerfuffle down there was, and from what I understand as well, is the reason the fourth official didn't put the time up was because they felt there could be a confusion to the fans because that had already eaten in. So I think there was like 11 or 12 minutes, but that had already eaten into that, and that was going to be added on top of that. But it's a mess. Whether that stopped, you don't know sometimes because it now, the added time now goes on the scoreboard, doesn't it? Before it used to stop at 90 and everyone was guessing when the referee was going to blow the whistle. So we went back to that stage, didn't we? Whether that stopped us from, I don't know. You don't know sometimes mentally players like want to know how long's left, don't they? But now you're just playing to the next goal wins, it feels like at the moment.
Yeah, it felt like they actually won the game as opposed to just getting a point from it.
Oh, it does. I kept saying we lost.
Yeah, it felt like that.
It felt like a defeat.
It reminded me, in terms of as well, with the nature of the celebrations, it reminded me a couple of years ago when Gillingham got that 97th minute equaliser down at that end with the fluky only shot that they had. It wasn't even on site, deflected up over Nick Zanard. Because you just see the away end going crazy. But we should be used to seeing the away end go crazy because we've seen it enough times over the last couple of years. It's a great away end to be in, to be honest with you, because 9 times out of 10, you're going to get a result or you're going to have a memorable moment. So never mind. was there anything else I wanted to say about that game? No. My other rant, Stu, it's time for my rant. Minute silences.
We're going to have them every week the way we're going. Like, there's a lot of things that go on in the world.
The thing is, this is so easily gets misinterpreted because people think you're a horrible person. But no, so all of football had a minute silence before their games, or at least in the English Football League. I don't know about the Premier League because I don't give a fuck. I don't watch it. But all the Football League teams did it. And I want to get you, everyone, I'm sure everyone must have seen this clip, but maybe people haven't. Is the American-Canadian comedian, I'm not sure, Anthony Jeselnik, right? And he does this great bit where he talks about people who put on their social media when something bad happens around the world, they put thoughts and prayers with the people of wherever it might have been. Da, da, da. And he's like, do you know what?
That's safe.
or the marking themselves safe on Facebook. Yeah. But he makes the point. He's just like, do you know what? You know what it's worth when you put something like that on social media, like thoughts and prayers. Do you know what that's worth? It's worth fucking nothing. Right? It means nothing. All you are doing is say, look at me. I'm such a good person. I care. All right. Then you make it immediately about yourself. And football does this so much these days. It drives me insane. The minute silence is not doing anything for anyone. It's just football saying, hey, look, we're nice people. We care. We're showing our support. A football match does not need to have a minute silence before. Like, it's of no relevance whatsoever. And if you think it is, if you think it does, my argument is, why don't we have minute silences before we do anything when a bad thing happens? Why don't we have, before Sainsbury's opens its doors in the morning, why don't all the customers stand outside and have a minute silence before they start their shopping? Right? We can have them all lined up outside on the pavement, waiting, having a minute silence solemnly with their trolleys. Like, you just wouldn't do it. It's like the analogy I always use about poppies on the shirts. Why the fuck do you need a poppy on your shirt when you're playing football? What are you actually doing in that time? Do you have to have a poppy on it? If you're going to wear a poppy, do you have to wear it on you 24/7? Like, at all times when I go to bed, do I need to stitch one into my underwear, my pajamas or whatever? Do you know? Anyway, I don't like it. I hate it. And it's just vacuous and narcissistic. And it's done for the completely the wrong reasons. and I wish we would stop, because above all else, it just completely devalues the minute silence, in my opinion. Thank you for listening to my TED Talk.
You know, what can I say? There was one funny moment. So I was just packing up all the stuff on a live show, and the minute silence was going on, and I stopped. So I thought, again, it's one of those things, right? I want to get to my seat as quick as possible, but I'm thinking I better stand still and all that sort of stuff anyway, right? And then this a girl, she must have been about eight, nine or 10, comes running down the stairs with like really loud shoes. So of course it's silent. So she's going down the stairs and her dad behind is going, shh. And then bless her, she then comes back up and then does the same thing. And I sat there and thought, the poor girl, she didn't realise.
She
now trying to correct herself. She now don't know what to do. Her dad's like, oh no, my girl's embarrassing me.
Yeah.
And I'm like, it doesn't need to be done anyway.
Yeah, yeah. Oh,
yeah, I did chuckle. Like, she had the loudest shoes. Like, it's like she was doing tap dancing, you know, the old metal steel things.
Yes.
And the more she tried to make herself silent, the more noise she made. Hilarious.
Yeah, it's always the way, isn't it?
It's just, yeah, but the problem you got is that the Premier League and the football league want to do this thing all the time. There's a tragedy happening around the world on every day.
Yeah,
whatever level it is. It's not good. It's not nice. But ultimately, do we have to? Are those people thinking, "Oh, they're nice people at Wimbledon, aren't they? They're being silent for us."
No,
they don't need that. No. But we just feel like we have to do it. And yeah, I agree. I agree totally with you.
It's just all for show, as so many things are in this day and age. And it's it is what it is. I mean, I feel like I have to make this point. It's a bit of an awkward one because it's sort of almost contradictory in a way. But I know that, you know, my church, for example, my school, fundraising activities, money's going out to help charities supporting people in Libya and Morocco. You're not going to hear about that. I know I've just said it here, but you know what I mean? But they themselves are doing it because it's actually of benefit. It's actually helping people. And they're not doing it because they don't want credit for it. They're not doing it to say, oh, look how wonderful we are. They're just getting it done to help. And I think football just completely misses this whole point. But anyway.
Can I just say, when you mentioned a church there, did you read today the church that have installed two beer pumps in their church for people? I couldn't stop laughing. I'm like, well, you serve wine.
Well.
Literally a vicar serving a pint of beer. And I'm like, I don't see the problem. But, you know, you're just thinking, because it's a traditional thing, isn't it? Moving, yeah. Whether you should be serving beer in a place of worship, I'm not sure. But it's an hilarious picture.
I mean, Stu, we are a football podcast, but the Church of England, I'm not Church of England, of course, I'm Catholic, but, you know, Church of England seems to be in some sort of form of mass suicide at the moment. It's actually killing itself. It's incredible to watch. This is it. Well, what else have you got left to do once you've continued to just completely make your institution irrelevant in the eyes of the people? Anyway, another rant, kickoff times, Champions League. I picked up my phone the other day and it said Newcastle get draw at AC Milan, right? And I was like, what are you on about? I'm like, 7 o'clock, they haven't even kicked off yet. No, apparently they were kicked off at, apparently all the games now have two kickoffs on a midweek because we just need to get all those games on TV, don't we? Absolutely. And I had a look, Stu, to prove my point about how rubbish top flight football has become. You know, our last season in the Premier League, we won on the opening day at Watford. Do you remember that 3-2 win?
I do, yes.
Yeah, Egil Olsen's first game in charge of us. Da, 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 da.
Yep.
Do you know how many Saturday 3 o'clock, 10 Premier League games of a weekend on a match day? How many of those were Saturday 3 p.m. kickoffs on that season, our last season in the Premier League?
Going back down, I would imagine a majority of them, a good 8.
Actually, I thought 8. No, 9. 9.
Wow. It's 1 Sunday.
One Sunday game, which was Everton Man U. I remember it for some reason. But, you know, like how... But that was proper excitement. It was like the big build-up to the start of the season. Then all of a sudden, come Saturday, 3 o'clock, if you weren't at a game, if you were following it on the radio or whatever, or Soccer Saturday, whatever, all these games, all this stuff happening, it's exciting. And then come 5 o'clock to do a match the day. Now it's just spread out all over the place. It's impossible to keep... like a, you know, keeper on top of it all, trying to figure out what's happened and what's not happened. And I just think it's mad. It's madness. But, you know,
see, I
am a parody of myself. I admit this. Yeah.
I agree with you, but equally, I am now going to, when I go to football now, I go, oh, what is a Saturday night game now? She's got the Friday night game, the Saturday night game, the Sunday night game, and the Monday night game. Uh-huh. So I'm like, well, what is it? But do you know what? The reason I say that is because I feel like I'm watching two different sports. I'm watching the Football League, the Premier League, which is a fantasy league with VAR and any rules you want to have. And that's my sort of like guilty pleasure. I don't mind watching that, but actually I'm a consumer, so I watch it when I'm in. But equally, I go and watch a game at 3 o'clock, and that's what football should be about. Mm-hmm. So it's a difficult one, isn't it? Because I don't mind a different kickoff because I get a chance to watch football. But that's because I'm a consumer at home, and football, I should be saying as a fellow fan, that's really bad for the fan out there. However, that's what Premier League fans want now. You don't get the money or these players that cost hundreds of millions of pounds without the football being on TV and the TV determine what it is. I think we get to American football where we have staggered games the whole way through the evening. I think I see it starting at like 10 o'clock in the morning, then 12 o'clock, then 2 o'clock, then 4 o'clock. And I see it being that way eventually because that's roughly what you're getting at the moment.
Do you know what this is, Stu? This is bread and circuses and why Western civilization is doomed. That's all I have to add, really, I think, about that one. I was going to point out something else, but I've decided against it. Surely because... You know what? I forgot what I was going to say, but never mind. Essentially, though, Stu, in my opinion, as you can probably guess, less is more.
Yeah, but I agree.
Speaking of which, we are running very, very late now. Sorry, because I've got on my soapbox again this week. Elsewhere in League Two last weekend, just one result I wanted to highlight in my pick of results was Harrogate Town getting a draw at Bradford City because Bradford need to do something radical because they are stuck in this underperforming cycle out of this league. Sack the manager. It can be the only answer, but something's. But then again, I look at their squad and I think it doesn't really strike me as a squad that would get promoted anyway. Especially when you look at Notts County's, Wrexham's, Gillingham's, and these sorts of clubs, and Stockport's as well. So, I think Bradford will have another season of disappointment. Harrogate first goal in open play this season. Do you know in League One, Cheltenham have played 8 games this season, and how many goals have they scored?
Absolute zero.
How is that even possible? I talk about law of averages all the time, and yet no.
I follow someone who's a Cheltenham. I think it was like last season. I think I was chatting to him about Cheltenham and stuff. So I follow him on Twitter. And he was just like, we haven't scored a goal or anything. But do you know what he thinks? Obviously, they've now dismissed him. They've now sacked him.
Have they? I missed that.
Yeah, they've now sacked him, which was inevitable.
Is that Wade Elliott?
But actually, last season, he'd done the unthinkable and actually kept them up when they looked almost certain to get relegated.
Yeah.
But new season, you forget about what everyone's done. Do you know what I mean? Basically, it's like you've got a... It's like you've got a clean slate, whether you've done well or not. And but I think Steve Cottrell is one of the favourites that just goes round and round, doesn't it, these managers?
Thank you. You're right. It does go round and round. And you reminded me of the other point, which we're so rapidly running out of time for. But you mentioned about the money and the Premier League fans wanting the money and they have to sort of accept all the daft kickoff times and everything for the money so they can sign more players and everything. But do you know what? There is an element where players... It's like arranging deck chairs on Titanic sometimes. The turnover of players, I think, is absolutely insane. And we see it in our division where we've got players that you see turning up at different clubs all the time. And you're thinking, have you actually improved any of your clubs? Or are you just literally going dot, dot, dot around the place? And then I look back to our Premier League days. And do you remember in 1998, we didn't sign a single player in the summer and we were fine.
Really? Well,
do you remember before 98, 99? I think we signed John Hartson during the season, like January time.
Yeah.
But in the summer, we didn't actually sign anyone.
Well, you can't do it now, though.
How did we ever... But even back in those days, I suppose, fans probably... But I didn't think anything of it at the time. I wasn't sitting... Thinking back in those days, you weren't sitting at your computer screen for 8 hours a day going, refreshing Twitter, going, announce something, sign somebody, do anything. And I don't care if you should, just also, do something.
And you also didn't have Jim White in a yellow tie with transfer deadline day. That wasn't a thing, the transfer deadline clock. You know what's interesting you say about players moving around? Ben Hennigan is without a club.
Really?
Released by Sheffield Wednesday, had an injury and can't find a club. Reminds us of when we picked him up when Blackpool let him go and a deal fell through at COVID. Mm. But there are a lot of players who are not finding clubs.
Interesting.
Who you'll forget about. Lyle Taylor, obviously, we know about, you know, potentially going to be training with Sheffield Wednesday. There's a lot of players. It got me thinking, Carnu, is it... Robson Carnu put a tweet on today, which I really liked, a thread of basically going about, you know, players are human. What would I do now if I, what would I do? What would I tell my younger self now if I was starting football? And it would be look outward rather than inward, look after yourself, think about your career out of football, you know, this job, you know, you could be without a club in 2 years. Players have got a very short contract, you know. So when we say about these players, oh, you know, get rid of them, they're rubbish and rubbish. Some of them don't find another club. And that, it just got, it was a really interesting of what he was said to his younger self. And it, I think we get away from these footballers are human people and they only get 1 year. You know, we've got some players who've got a 1 year contract. Omar Bagel's got a 1 year contract. You know, and there's a lot of pressure on that. So, but you're right, people do go around in circles, don't they? I'm sure we will get Lyle Taylor back at some point.
Yeah, your dream will come true, Stu. Talking about players.
He's 58.
Well, still take him. Talking about players doing roundabouts, signing for new clubs and everything. Very, very quick, Stu. Aaron says super match game. This is quite tricky, so don't spend too long trying to figure it out because we're running rapidly out of time. But our first game back in the third tier, if you remember, in 2016, after promotion at Wembley, was actually away at Warsaw. And we lost 3-1 on opening day. I think Lyle Taylor scored a penalty with the last kick of the game, basically, as a consolation. Yeah. Three of our starting lineup that day, so eight of our starting 11, had got us promoted from League Two, but we had three debutants. And those three debutants were blank, 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 and blank, blank. However, I think there's one, because it's quite a famous one, that you might be able to get because it's in a specialised position.
Goalkeeper.
There we go.
I can't remember the goalkeeper was. Was it Clark?
Yeah, well done.
Do you understand? I remember the game. Lyle Taylor scored a penalty from memory, I think.
Yes, because I just said that.
Oh, shit. It's what I'm thinking of listening. It don't happen. No. Who did we sign that first season? I can't think for life of me. No. And I know we're running out of time, so I'm going to use that excuse and not thinking.
Nice. There's no added time on the podcast, unfortunately. Sean Kelly at left back. And Chris Whelpdale.
Oh, legendary. He scored at Peterborough in the Cup game.
He did.
Remember?
He did.
For what player?
Yeah, didn't quite work for us, but nice guy.
Never judge him after a month. That's the key.
That is the key, the Derek Duncan effect. Right, very quickly then, let's run through Warsaw. We travelled to Bescot Stadium on Saturday. They last season, they had a disastrous second half of the season, won two of the last 23. They finished 16th. They're currently 14th with three wins and three defeats in their first eight games. Last week, they lost 2-0 at Swindon Town. First of five of their first away games have been away from home. They remain unbeaten at home in the league this season. Matt Sadler is their boss in his first managerial position, and Danny Johnson, who was on loan at Walsall last season from Mansfield, he then went back to Mansfield for the second half of last season, managed to score against us for both Walsall and Mansfield in that time. He has now signed permanently for Warsaw. He's travelled over to Poland. We are winners in four. We are going to a team, as I say, I'm being at home in the league this season. A scoreline prediction for you.
1-1.
That's it. Thanks for the other thing I was going to say is we talked about Sutton earlier and how rubbish they are, seven consecutive defeats, but they host Milton Keynes tomorrow. So we are recording some Friday, of course. So please end that run, Sutton. Please, please, please at least get a point. Thank you very much.
Sutton's weird, isn't it? You know, I remember having a discussion with someone we know about the what Sutton has signed and what we're signed in the summer. And I thought our signings were miles better than Sutton's. And this person said, no, Sutton have done a really good window. And of course, I remind that person constantly.
I can't think who that is. I cannot think who this person is.
But this person doesn't think he's wrong. Sorry, it's a he. I've given that away now.
I haven't actually asked. Wrong. We don't know, actually, if they could identify, however.
Sorry. So Doris doesn't think he's wrong. Yeah, and now we just get, well, no, judge it after 10 games. Of course, when we get 10 games, we judge it after 20 games. And by the time they mathematically can't get out of the trouble, they might admit. But it does surprise me. Don't get me wrong, their window wasn't bad. But they've obviously got in a rut, and that's what happens in League Two.
They've had some difficult games as well. It's a difficult place to go. But anyway, that is it for this week. So, Stu, thank you very much for joining me. Thank you for putting up with my rants this week. See what it will be next week. Who knows? EPPP, probably, because that came up in conversation this week. Anyway, updates from the game with Warsaw in Poland will be available on Twitter at 9YRS Podcast. Other than that, Alexa Bliss, bag first, milk last, 2 + 2 = 4. And we shall, if we've not all dead by then, because we've all exploded in an AI disaster, we'll speak to you again next week.